Welcome to another SEMO marketing podcast. My name is Simon Dell. I'm the CEO of SEMO. We are a national marketing solutions company. I completely forgot what we do there for a minute. And I have as my special guest today a lovely person called Fiona Campbell. I'm not going to explain what Fiona does because I'm going to let Fiona do that herself. So welcome to the show, Fiona.
Hi, thank you for having me, Simon.
Tell us, give us the Fiona, the Fiona edited highlights, the sort of the 5 minute show reel, the sizzle reel, as it were.
Sure thing. So I do have my own Australian virtual assistant agency called Thought Penny, but right now that's closed for business. Our full book of clients are not growing any further. So at the moment, my current project is my sister business, which is the Virtual Assistant Lead Network. So essentially what that is, it's a jobs board for virtual assistants and online business managers who are based in Australia. And unlike other platforms like Seek, it's free for businesses to list their ongoing roles or short-term projects or one-off tasks, etc., on our jobs board. And that's because we have a membership base of those Australian VAs and OBMs who are accessing those jobs board and our training and webinars, etc. So, going strong. It's been going for a few years now and we have over 300 members. And, it's run on a very lean team. From the beginning, before AI was a thing, it was already a lean team of virtual assistants, created by virtual assistants, run by virtual assistants for virtual assistants. And virtual assistants, just to throw that phrase in again. We've just started using Claude to help with the operations there and power through even more work, keeping our existing team and exciting.
Okay.
What we're seeing too.
So obviously we're going to talk today, the predominant conversation is obviously AI. We are bombarded with all sorts of information about AI every day in pretty much every medium that we're in. What are you personally using it for at the moment? What's the go-to for you day to day?
Yeah, sure. So we do use it to help organize our content, not necessarily create our content, like people typically are using AI for. For us, we're predominantly using AI to document our business and set up procedures and protocols. And it's the day-to-day running of the business itself. So important to know, though, that I do think it's really important anyone who wants to do this, they look at what plan they're using and the settings. I think it's important to make sure that no one on your team is able to share their conversations with the platform. For instance, we're using Claude. I'm using the team's plan so that I can enforce that no one is able to share their chats with Claude for Claude to learn from, etc. And also, they're not able to share public links to any chats they have. It's all kept internal. So that gives us, assurity that it's not going anywhere, so we can use it to its full abilities. And so, it knows exactly how our business is run. We have shared projects with that team's plan. You can have shared projects and each project has shared files, shared knowledge. So the chats themselves, whoever from my team I put in that project, they can't see each other's chats unless that's shared with the team, though the knowledge files that it's pulling from are all shared. And so what I mean by that, it's markdown files, and the types of files are a record of decisions that we make, a backlog of problems we've seen that aren't exactly a priority, but someone should probably fix those next time we get a chance. There's our tone of voice, our brand and style guide to say, no, that color red isn't it looks similar, but it's not quite right. I'm a bit pedantic and a bit of a perfectionist. And I like consistency, not just visually, but with the words we use, etc. There are definitely some things that I don't want our brand ever to say, like mumpreneur or anything like that.
That's a terrible word. We all hate that word.
Yeah, I'm not happy with it. And anyone who wants to use it, go for it. But that's a decision I've made for my business. And it means that I can put those rules in place. And I can even tell Claude, next time someone tries to use it on my team, is go, this is what Fiona thinks about this, and have an automatic warning system in there. And visually as well. It's, if you're trying to make this color work with this color, Fiona's not going to be happy about that. This is the reason why. And I guess a big part of that as well is that's all well and good, but the onus can't all be on me to build that out, though I did nerd out over one weekend and build out a big chunk of how all this works, because that's my thing. But it is about educating your team as to how we're going to use it and how we're going to maintain it. And it only works if you spot something, an error. You know, Claude's made a suggestion and you know it's wrong, and we explain to Claude, no, we never ever do this because of this. And it will update the project files the next time someone goes to do it. And I'm in a good place because everyone on my team has been with me for a while. We already know the rules and what it should be, but we're still teaching Claude that when it makes a suggestion, it's, oh, I'm going to suggest this because according to the brand guidelines or according to the protocol, we do this to avoid this risk, et cetera. So it's not just about just telling someone, this is a new person, for example, this is the way we do things in our business. It's also educating them on the reason why, the way you'd bring on any staff member before you had AI, you explain why we do things the way we do, because they're going to remember it better and have buy-in to that decision.
Do you think that with those guidelines, I mean, how rigid are those guidelines? Because this is obviously one of the big challenges that you find with AI, is that it's not going to suggest anything new. There's no flexibility. It's being governed by a certain set of rules. But, I mean, to a degree, that's all businesses, irrespective of whether you're using AI or not using AI. But do you find there's any out-of-the-box thinking? Do you think it's just following a set of patterns that it's supposed to do, and that perhaps is potentially going to hold you back in the long term?
Great question. So a lot of thoughts on this. First, I don't think it's possible for it to have out of the box thinking, because it's pulling from learnt behaviors. But I do find that Claude is a lot better than ChatGPT in terms of understanding nuances. And I do think we've really landed on something great here, where we don't just say, this is the rule and this is the rule. Claude has the rule and it has the reason why. So if it finds a situation that doesn't quite fit in that box, I might tell it to do something and it will say, oh, this isn't really in line with your protocol, but I can see here that this is different to the example in our reason why for this. And then I'll say, and it'll ask me if I'm sure. And if I say I'm sure, I'll go, right, well, let's document this nuance here. So it keeps adding layers. So it might be, you know, customer service as an example. It's helping us to triage the inbox and provide context. So I've still got the same team member going through emails and dealing with inquiries. But the time it would have taken her to go and check their membership record and check, the history of email comms we've had with this person is really minimized. And so, and it's not just that, Claude's also going, oh, I know that they've also gone and downloaded this lead magnet. We shouldn't suggest that they go and get this resource because they've already got it and they've opened it. It knows so much more than we would know. If we want to answer someone quickly, we're not going to go and find every single little detail or know that they've been a customer on and off for the last 4 years, et cetera. And so with that out of the box thinking, it's not out of the box thinking, but there's an element of agreeing or just towing the line and agreeing with everything you say. And I think it's important to put in your instructions that it should question every decision. And, you know, if someone is going, oh, no, we need to go against protocol and go this way, it's insisting on asking for the explanation why.
Yeah.
So that it can answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about mistakes, because obviously I think that's something that people are concerned about. I'm going to use an example that I literally found 2 minutes before I spoke to you. So I have Claude integrated into an e-commerce store, it's a Shopify store, which will have something like 300 to 400 SKUs on. And as orders come in, the invoices are turned into CSV files. The CSV file is uploaded to Shopify. This is all done by Claude, not me.
Yep.
And the quantity on hand is updated. Or if it's a new product, Shopify will build the product, put it in stock.
Mm.
So what might take somebody hours and hours and hours and hours of work, right, is now being done completely automated by Claude. Claude put in a back order stock item 2 weeks ago that was a back order stock item. It wasn't coming into stock. It was listed in the invoices back order, but Claude has misread it and put it into stock. And one of the items that isn't in stock has been sold. Now, it's not a major disaster. You know, we can sit there and go back to the client and go, hey, that product doesn't exist. We haven't had it arrive yet. We're really sorry. Do you want us to refund your money?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a problem. But that's me on a smaller scale with items that are, you know, not a major issue. What do you say to the people who would say that is an enclosed example in a small space of a problem that could go wrong, isn't a major issue? But as your business gets bigger and more significant and more important, those mistakes are much more significant and potentially much more costly than this mistake would be.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so what I'd say is that you need to treat your AI like it is a person. You wouldn't bring in someone new. And so say, oh, you've done it right once. I'm just going to stop monitoring the work that you do and let you go off. There are going to be times. I still think that there are instances where Claude's making less mistakes. Picking up. When my team's proofreading a listing, for example, there is so much work that goes in when someone submits a listing, so for a VA role, and we need to proofread it. There are so many things that go into that, including making sure it's not a scam. And, you know, people are really clever, but it's things are going to slip through. Mistakes are going to be made if you're working with a human team member, even someone that's been with you for a while. And so what you do with a human is you put things in place, checks in place. You know, you have work being checked at certain points. And yes, I've got my Claude making errors, but that's why we always have we're monitoring closely the first 100 times it does something, very, very closely. But even still, we've got that human checkpoint at each. So as that example with the listings coming in, we get alerted straight away on Slack and via email, et cetera. We want to jump on it as soon as there's a listing comes. That's, you know, the bread and butter for our business is jobs for our jobs board. Yeah. So we're going in. But the first thing we do now is we say, hey, Claude, we've got a new listing. And we've taken it through step by step what we would do, but we still do it. So that's something we're never, ever going to fully automate. But and we have a human, but we've taught it to at each stage of the process. It's telling us what it's about to do. We quickly read it and we give it the go ahead, the green light. There are some things that don't need, you know, that aren't that critical or don't have that much risk that don't need that. But those sorts of processes where it could go wrong, I think just having a human have a look, go, is this right at some point? Or, you know, how did you find out that, is it because that order was placed that you found out that Claude had created that? So maybe there needs to be something in place where it's got, if you put a rule in place, if you're ever going to do this, you need human sign off first, send an email or set an Asana task or send a Slack message just to flag, hey, I just did something cool. Someone might better be aware of this before someone orders something that doesn't exist. And for that same reason as well, I have in my organization rules that Claude never sends an email. It will draft a million emails, but it's told not to send. I do think that you need that. Well, what would you do with a new hire? Would you just tell them to go ahead and make it happen? And maybe you would. Maybe you're fine with taking those risks, but surely you're deciding in what context. It's like, what's the worst that can happen with this type of, in this area of my business, this business function? Whereas you might be more protective and careful with another. But we've had lots of conversations where we tell Claude, mate, we don't say you're an idiot, but we might as well. But it's not just, hey, you've made a mistake. It's the conversation you have with a real human and saying, can we work out why the mistake happened? What do we do? What do we put in place to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
And building that. And I think as well that that's, if you're going to build a skill in Claude or an automation using Claude, you should first be doing it in chat, in projects, and really refining it and having a human work with every step until it doesn't make a mistake,
Okay.
100 times.
With all this talk, do your staff ever feel that their days are numbered?
No. I'm speaking on their behalf, but I'd like to think not. If you're listening, no. And the way I talk about the elephant in the room with that as well. Like, hey, everyone, we're using this great thing. Oh, look at this job that used to take all this time. We've got a backlog of things that we want to work on. They've got their own passion projects within the business that, you know, they've have to keep pushing down because it hasn't been a priority. But now this is freeing up their time, and it's not just that. They're still doing the check. So they're still looking at it. Claude's coming back and saying, I don't think this is a scam because of these things. And also I checked these 50 other things that you would never have thought to check to make sure that this person is real. But they're still involved. They've been promoted to more of a management position. Because I also only hire VAs that, you know, have that initiative that I can entrust them with responsibilities, not just spoon feed them tasks. Their job is to make sure it's to use Claude as a tool or even as, you know, their junior staff member and get it to do the legwork. But now I say, well, now that you've got it doing that, it's your responsibility to make sure that we have a blog post lined up for the next 3 months, that we have, you know, we're planning ahead on finding new people to present webinars to our members, etc., because you're not doing that work that, to be honest, that might be why some people leave a job as well, whether it's employees a junior VA who's becoming more ambitious. It's if you're getting someone to do the boring work that could be done by Claude or other AI.
Just playing devil's advocate here. The challenge that a lot of us have got to where we've got to in our lives and learned the skills by doing the boring work. And doing the boring work is part and parcel of, I always think about the, the famous tennis players, and or you know the famous story of Tiger Woods, who was, you know, when he was a young golfer, was you know sitting hitting balls, you know, far longer than anybody else was, out in the wind and out in the rain, out in the thunderstorms and all those kind of things. That boring repetition that we've done in our training lives is what builds our skill set and our muscle memory and knowledge base of all these kind of things into becoming understanding who we are now. And if we're removing that from somebody, how do they get to, you know, how do they become who they want to become without that experience?
Yeah, I guess I haven't given that enough thought because I haven't had to, because I've always hired, you know, at that level where they're coming in and to the point where they can tell me what they think needs to be done and take over. But in terms of the up and coming, you know, fresh grads out of uni who maybe that is something to worry about, that they're not trying to do stuff from scratch. And I still think in that instance that AI is useful in terms of helping to teach them how they can improve what they've done. But maybe we do need to put something in place for that next generation where it's, oh, no, you're not going to learn how it's done. I mean, there's a reason that my team can look at what Claude's done and say, no, that's wrong. I know you've put forward a compelling argument as to why we should do it this way, but I'm here to tell you, I'm reading that and you're going to annoy people. You know, Claude will draft stuff all the time. I'd say that, more than 50% of what it writes, we'll copy it, paste it and completely reword it to be us and to be human, much quicker than starting with a blank canvas, for sure. But you're right, you know, there's a reason that we know what we need to change it to, and that's because we're clinging on to who we are as people being genuine. And, you know, we are telling Claude, oh, cut the fluff. We don't need to be condescending or add in words for the sake of it. You know, two word sentence is fine sometimes. And so, that's a really interesting concept that I'm going to think about all day now.
I'll send you away to have a think about that, and we can discuss it a later day. So what are you integrating with Claude? So I'm going to preface that question by talking about what I've integrated with Claude. I think the four main things would be, it's currently, whilst we're talking, it is currently looking through my Gmail account, trying to find things in my Gmail account, following certain patterns and certain rules that I've asked it to look for. So it's looking through my Gmail. I've integrated it with Canva, but that hasn't been particularly successful. We're still struggling from a design perspective in terms of getting it to do certain things, but that's probably me not having spent a lot of time looking at it. And then Klaviyo and Shopify, which it has been super successful with. So for me, that's where I'm integrating. We use Pipedrive on a company basis.
Oh, yep.
We're trying to integrate it fully into Pipedrive. There's lots of places that we're using it. With different levels of success. So how about you? What's been the sort of standout integration from you?
Okay, so first on the Canva thing, completely agree. It's good at Canva in terms of looking at what someone's created and reviewing it and saying, oh, looks like they've not used your fonts or your brand colors, and this is what needs to be fixed. But I haven't used it to create images. I have set up a custom MCP for something that can generate images with AI. We're not really using it. I was just nerding out once and playing with it. But have you checked out Claude Design?
Not to a massive degree just yet.
Okay.
I literally stopped thinking about it.
You do need time because it is a rabbit hole. And once you realize what it can do, it can, it's a fun way to procrastinate. but what I'd suggest is if you are going to do it, well, this suggestion works for us because we already have comprehensive documentation on our brand and style guide in projects. And just to do a quick segue, so one of my favorite integrations is I've done a custom MCP with AI Engine. So AI Engine is a plugin on our WordPress website. And now I can, I'll have a website page. So I still use copywriters, and I got a copywriter to put together our about page, our new about page, 4 years in a business and only just wrote our about page, breaking all the rules. But it was fantastic. So I gave it the copy and I then said, I've got the copy. The copy's approved. I love it. Help me build the website. And then it built the page. And then I gave it image files for post-it notes. And then I worked with it to say, I still haven't decided, you know, where these work, or it'll put one there and I'll go, those colors clash. And so I write into the rules, go, never ever let anyone put this colored post-it note when we have this background, etc. You know, I'm really pedantic and that might be a problem sometimes, but it's working so far. So it's, you know, I've got the preview page, so it's not published yet, but I've got the preview page on my desktop computer, and then I'm talking to Claude on my phone using voice. And so I'm just looking at it and saying, and I don't know what the problem is, whether it's a margin or padding, or you know how sometimes when you go, there's just that one niggling thing that's annoying me about that page and you want to change it. And I would spend ages fiddling and then looking to see how it renders and then going back and going back. I can just say, I don't know what the problem is, but I can see the gap between that and that is not the same as the gap between that and that. Or the alignment of where this image is to the text should be here. I'm just saying that by voice, and then it's going away and fixing the page without me touching a thing. I just refresh the preview and see what it's fixed. And just talking through how you want your website to change is pretty exciting. But, you know, it's through activity like that that we've fully documented our brand and style guide to the point where if someone tries to put that colored post-it note on that background, it goes, Fiona wants to know if you want the website to look like shit. And then and so it's that documented to that point. Then I go, oh, I've just discovered Claude Design. Write me a brief. Because in Claude Design, it's not just creating images, et cetera. It can create HTML website files. But you create a design system first. So you teach it what your brand colors are, all of that stuff I just talked about. But first, if you start with your chat that already knows all this stuff about you, I said, you need to tell it to learn about itself. So I said, go and research everything you can about Claude Design functionality, then write me a brief to go and put in to create that design system. So I'm not filling in all their fields. It's all done for me because I've already told one Claude employee once what to do, and so it can then delegate. And then from there, it's pretty spectacular. Like it's leaps and bounds above every other automated design that I can think of.
Well, I'm going to have to go and have a play around with it. And the interesting thing is, and I think here's another challenge is that I have burnt through all of my credits yesterday. So I'm going to have to upgrade to a slightly higher capacity level. That's been my sort of challenge. But I've been using it extremely heavily this week. So, you know, in the process of being involved in setting up another business and making sure that that's all set up, ready for people to come in and run it so that I don't have to. Thank you for everything, all your ideas and suggestions. So it is a rabbit hole that we can dive into, you know, for hours on end. But what I was going to ask you, the final question today, if a business owner is sort of looking at it you know, scratching their head and going, hey, I need to start doing this, what's a good starting point for them?
So in an ideal world, a business already has some procedures documented, though talking to lots of VAC because I know that many people have everything in their head. And so in that case, I would, the very first chat, I'd set up that Claude account. And this is not sponsored by Claude. and I would, the first conversation would be, I want to document how my business runs. I need you to interview me and create markdown files that would allow any other user to come in and ask a question about how my business operates. And as part of that prompt, say, you need to set it up so that every time you interact with me, you're updating that knowledge bank. And that's something that I have had to enforce for me, for my organization rules. I've now put it into a skill now that I've tested it quite a few times. But one of it that is, whenever new knowledge is learnt or a correction is made or there's a nuance that it needs to document, or, you know, we've written a new customer service reply, you know, it says, make sure you tell me what, like, the final version that you sent to the customer so it can learn in this situation, this is how we deal with it. It's that making sure, enforcing that anything new is put back into those files so that you're continuously improving. It's not that you need to document every single thing about your business. It's teaching Claude that it needs to work with you as you work to build up those files. And I think the backlog one is one of the most important ones as well, because you know what your priority is. You know you've got to get something done, and it goes, oh, well, I've picked up this error here. This is something on the website that needs to be fixed. And, you know, sometimes you don't have time to go and create an Asana task. And or it doesn't even need one. You just go, oh, just tell me the next time I'm working on this page of the website, et cetera. We'll fix it then. So it's documentation is the most important thing, and making sure that you don't give up if it does the wrong thing, it doesn't do what you like, or what it gives you is rubbish. Tell it it's rubbish and tell it why. And then, you know, say, you made this mistake. Why did you make it? What do we do to make sure it doesn't happen again? Treat it like you would a person, and don't assume that it's going to make no errors, because, you know, there's, you know, topical with the AI slot button. But I think that, yeah, a lot of people are going, oh, well, it must be right because, you know, AI wrote it, so it must be fine. It must have no mistakes. There must be nothing wrong with it. We're not holding it to the same standards we would a new team member. And I think it's important to do that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your insights, thoughts and ideas. And as I said, there was a lot more that we could talk about, but I think this is one of those things that people need to digest, you know, in small increments, and start learning slowly and you know, get better and better at. So final thing, if everyone wants to reach out to you, what's the easiest way of getting hold of you?
Find me on LinkedIn, Fiona Campbell, Virtual Assistant Lead Network. But if you need a VA, then valeadnetwork.com.au, and we do have, they're all based in Australia, and we do have members who can actually help you set up Claude, etc. as well.
And I can testify, because our VA who is been with us for a long, long time, Jess Woods, came through your network. So
she's wonderful. I love Jess.
Forever grateful, forever grateful for that. So
beautiful. All right. Thanks so much, Simon, for having me.
Have a good rest of your day, Fiona. Thank you.
Too. Bye. Bye.